we're back. Ooh. Hey, listeners, welcome back to the Alan Smithy Film Review.
That's right. We're still in quarantine and we're still making it happen.
Coming to you from quarantine studios. Now, unfortunately, coronavirus got our last episode. We did an entire 4-hour introspection on Space Jam. The system we're using decided to record my voice at 40 decibels and Ben not at all.
So sorry, my friend in Indiana. Yeah. Wayne, we'll make it up to you. We'll find another sports movie for you to watch. That's better than Space Jam, if it's possible.
I don't think it's possible. Find one. I think that's...
I want to hear you rapping again. The listeners need to hear you sing that song.
I agree. Well, perhaps we'll do Space Jam again sometime. We did Arrival a couple times. That's almost as good as Arrival.
I forgot about that. Wow.
Yeah. Instead we had another request. Ben, tell us about our request.
Yeah, the request came from someone I work with named Kurt McCormack, and he is a big horror movie buff, and he gave us a couple of different recommendations, of which I said, that one looks good, and Damien said, boy, I hate horror movies. Yep. So we picked The Witch, which looks like the Vitch. Based on the old Puritan spelling where they didn't have W's apparently. And it's a 2015, I think, horror film. Robert Eggers directed it, same guy who did The Lighthouse last year's black and white one. So he likes edgy, creepy movies, and this is his first feature, I think.
And this, of course, also had Emma from the movie Emma, which I think was the last movie released prior to all the movie theaters getting shut down.
Yes.
What's her real name?
It's Anya Taylor-Joy, who we know mostly from Split and Glass. But she has another film. She's a pretty young actress. This is, I think, maybe her first major role, too. She was...
her first leading role, for sure.
First leading role.
Yeah.
So it's got her in it. It's got other people you say, I know that person from this thing, whatever. It's got a lady named Kate Dickey is the mother. She's Catherine, and she was in, I know her from Game of Thrones mostly, Lysa Arryn. She's also in Prometheus. You have that really grisly father archetype, Ralph Ineson. I had to Google that. He played William the father. I knew him mostly from Chernobyl because I watched that series. He's also a little bit in Game of Thrones and Guardians of the Galaxy, but definitely a character actor with a very grumbly voice.
In my head, I thought he was Irish, but I don't know. Ben, the whole premise of this movie is that it was taken wholesale from existing records, existing things that people wrote and said happened back during the Puritan colony times. And it all centers around a family standing in defiance of a church that has gone astray, moving into the wilderness, and trying to make it on their own. Growing corn in, I guess, Massachusetts or something along those lines.
Somewhere in New England. We don't think we're ever given a geographic zone. But yeah, it's like, screw you guys, we're going to go grow corn in the middle of the creepiest part of the planet we can find because we just disagree with you. And they got a rough and tough family out there. Small farm, obviously, some little kids, new baby born. And it's the age of not having Google, lack of telecommunications, nothing to tell you otherwise other than myth and religious piety and being devout Christians.
Yes.
But this is a special area they moved to because there are goings-ons of supernatural, you want to say, forces happening?
I guess. I mean, for the most part, it's just really poor family dynamics. This is effectively a horror version of American Beauty set in, basically the same concept of we got a little bit of an Oedipal thing going on with dad and daughter, and we got the eldest son looking at his sister's tits because there's nothing else for him to do, and you got really creepy twins. And if you really were just signing up for I want to be burned at the stake as a witch, you provide twins back during those times.
The twins, though, I'll say, the only ones in the cold movie that smiled, that cracked a smile. Yes. No one else cracked a smile the entire film.
Yes. And, of course, we had a goat. We had several goats. But we had old Black Tom. Is that what his name
was? Black Philip, the Billy Goat. The same. I think Marilyn Manson has the tattoo of him on his arm. It's like, the symbol of satanic rituals.
Yeah.
I think actually the Satanic Temple championed this movie after it came out for portraying things in at least an open and curious way rather than just condemning it. This family is on the outs.
I guess old Philip's same thing as Baphomet, sure. The premise of this movie is how can we take the worst parts of Hateful Eight in terms of overly long shots that, of nothing with really loud music that means nothing for half the movie? So that's most of the plot. And then there is the family stuff of, well, you know what? We're probably going to starve to death. This is probably a bad idea. I wish we hadn't left England. Settling the new world is a lot harder, especially when we try to do it ourselves. And, oh, by the way, the dad doesn't know how to farm. There's too many kids are useless.
The mother's hysterical. Nobody's happy. It's just a grim, grim time, and it's painted that way. I think I read that all the light is natural light. There's no sure. Yeah, it's of the period. So, boy, it was grim and dark, and I think they only shot at dusk or dawn because it was just a very dark, dark movie. But it's a horror movie, so I'll say, okay, that's your palette, whatever. Well, but yes, there are long periods of silence.
I just assume that's what central Massachusetts looked like.
A lot of it actually does. I've traveled quite a bit through Massachusetts, and it definitely has that old, crowded trees feeling, that claustrophobic feeling, because it's less land up there to play with, so it's more claustrophobic. But yeah, there is a lot of long periods of silence. There, not quite the Hateful Eight. I'm gonna push back a little bit. The opening of Hateful Eight was about 87 minutes of just long shots of crosses and crows and trees, if I recall. Uh-huh. This was a slow-ish movie for about what, an hour and a half though. Pretty quick flick.
It felt so much longer than that. I thought that I was taking the SATs and was going to write another paper about the Crimson Letter. This was not a horror. You, Ben, absolutely pitched it. He said, Damien, this isn't a traditional horror movie. It's more creepy.
Yeah.
Ben absolutely nailed it. This is, you know, it is a creepy movie. Unfortunately, it's also a boring movie. So it kind of the creepiness. I guess one of the reasons why I don't like horror movies is that I've become too desensitized. You have the existential terror of these people are just making horrible decisions and bad parenting and chopping wood and the occasional jump cut. But I really needed to care about any of these horribly unlikable people in order for me to care about them being killed. So
they're not likable people. I will give you that. And in horror, I've said this before, is one of the hardest genres to get right to do effectively. So much 90% of the crap out there we get is the jump scare stuff, the slasher stuff, the quick and easy stuff, like The Nun, whatever came out last year. That's just like Hollywood's like, all right, well, it made money doing this formula last time. We'll take a chance and do it again this time. A24. It made this film. They're the ones that made Hereditary, Midsommar, I think. They're the ones that say, you know what? We're going to take a chance. We know there's an audience out there that likes this brand of horror.
Yeah.
And it's not the cliche horror we're all used to. I think there's one jump scare in this entire movie that I caught, and it was the death at the end with the goat attacking somebody. That was the only jump that I got. Otherwise, it's this long, long tracking shots and scenes of tension without music, which I really appreciate. I think Hereditary did that very well.
What are you talking about? There was so many. My biggest complaint about the thing I was expecting for you to hate about this movie was how much music was in it and how much it was designed to make you feel a certain way. The whole time that
it was there, it didn't
the
overload.
Whole time
it was
they
not
were
overloaded.
Going out into the country. There was a 2-minute long shot of the rolling hills where they just kept adding a violin screeching on top of more violin screeching on top. And I'm just like, oh boy, I bet this is either going to pay off in a jump cut or it's going to pay off in no way at all. So that you're like, ha ha, we subverted your expectations. No, that this movie had horrible music in it. I despised it. So
I'm talking about the soundtrack, but it didn't bother me. I think it complimented. Like Joker had the same kind of cello strings.
No. I'm sorry. You cannot compare Joker to this tripe. No. There's strings that are designed to create music, and then there's strings designed specifically to only create tension. When the script couldn't do it, the camera work couldn't do it. No, we're going to use sound design to lift this load. It's so funny that you and I have traded positions.
I've never said I was totally consistent on that. Most time I argue about the music thing because it's most movies that use music too much have like an Apple track out there of like, oh, action movie, oh, comedy movie, oh, horror movie. It's just like this cash grab, easy stuff, whatever producer at the bottom dollar wants to get some music on the track. And this is obviously very subversive and very different. And I'm respecting it just for that. And I think part of my subconscious, like, I'll accept this. And it did add some tension. It was hard to listen to. Sure, it's not going to be on the top 40. It's hard to listen to. But I think it did a good job complimenting it. And it didn't distract me. So, yes, we have turned the page here. Yeah. We have differed in the way that I didn't expect.
It was
so
distracting, I could barely not see it. It was so distracting. So,
wow.
You're absolutely right. No, there wasn't a hit from Taylor Swift in this. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying was that they used, and clearly this happened in the editing booth, they were putting the shots together, and they realized, oh, this isn't scary or fun or interesting. What can we do to make this something? We'll throw sound design in it. And so good for the sound designers for picking up the weight. But I just didn't feel the complimentary nature you're talking about here. It really did feel like, when you say subversive, this felt like a high school version of subversion. It's, I'm rebelling against God. Look at me. I'm going to rebel against God by being even more godly. Ha, they'll never see that coming. Like, this felt too much like this felt like something one of my friends would have wrote, is what I'm getting at. It's like, this was...
So the music struck a chord with you, so to speak, in a negative way.
Was there
anything about the horror elements in this movie that didn't irritate you like the music did?
No, because it was all boring. Like, I mean, that's what I'm getting. It's like, nothing was scary. It was all just, oh, man. Oh, there's a pretty woman in the middle of the woods. I bet she turns out to be an old hag. Oh, she is. Oh, no. Satan's going to talk through the goat to the twins. Spoiler alert. It's like, of course he did.
Yes, there are some things that are we've seen before.
Everything was cliched in this. And I guess.
No, I wouldn't say that. The dialogue wasn't.
What do you mean?
The old English dialogue. I have such a sad weakness of faith. Oh, yestermorn, and I cannot shake it. I mean, just it's Elizabethan,
but when
Puritan.
When Anya said, or what's her name in the thing?
Thomason.
When Thomason is like, get the hints or whatever, and it sounded like no one spent any money on dialect coaches. They wrote the words correctly, but it sounded like she was just forcing.
She's an American, so she struggled a bit more, I think, than the English actors, who sound more authentic, because she was supposed to be English in this movie, I assume.
Well, what's bad is that I did watch Emma, and there she is with a British accent. So
she's okay.
There's a difference between putting the work in and not putting the work in, and so I think you and I had different experiences on this movie.
Yeah, I appreciated the, like, for me, I mean, this is the movie I'm gonna go out and buy, but I appreciate it. I respect that it did something different than the average horror movie, in that it, you know, took a chance with the dialogue. It's a strange story. Not everything's, you know, here's what this means. A little bit of a mystery going through it. Yes, there are some things like, well, of course that's gonna be an old hag. Well, of course that's gonna happen with the goat, but you don't mind getting there because you're enjoying the process. At least I did. I enjoyed the cinematography, the editing, yes, the sound. The acting is kind of all over the place, and, I mean, it's kind of one-dimensional.
You got a lot of kids, and there's only so much you can do with kids.
Yeah, kind of one-dimensional. But the actual witch scenes, like the dark shadows, and like when the scene in the barn when she turns around, or like the thing with the crow with the mother, it's like, okay, this is really creepy crap. This is stuff that's actually... And you see, in The Lighthouse, you haven't seen that movie, but it's the same kind of thing. There's a level of violence that they take it to that they allow before hitting cut. You're going to show the extreme. That's what kind of Game of Thrones did in a few things, too. So I like that it pushed the boundary in that respect.
So, Ben, remind me, were you a big fan of Mother?
No. Wait, which one? The Aronofsky panic one?
Yes.
No. No, it was frustrating to watch on many levels. It could have been like a short, like a 15-20 minute short. I would have gotten it, but for some reason it was 2 hours.
Oh yeah.
And like you, after you get what the premise is, you're just kind of bored. You're like, all right, I know what's happening. It's just annoying to watch.
Yeah.
So did you feel that annoyed
Yes.
In this one.
Yes, because
you're comparing your annoyance level in Mother to this.
Not only that, but you made a great point. Oh, the bird with the mother. Oh wow, the graphic violence in a weird way. Ooh, so creepy. Like it's like my problem was that the actual stakes in the movie prior to everyone going insane and killing each other, the actual stakes in the movie were that they were starving to death. And that's an incredibly difficult thing to get the audience to relate to unless they've ever been that close to starvation. And my fat self, my first world problem, white privileged self, has never had that problem. So
even in quarantine,
man, I cooked Mandy and I knocked out a fantastic Korean meal tonight. I am super proud of us for with this. The quarantine has actually pushed our food skills, food game up.
Using your cast iron?
Using literally everything. It's hilarious. I'm using cast iron. I've got my wok going. I've got my induction burner steaming shalom bao. I mean, I had it all going on.
You know nothing of starvation of the old Puritan ways.
It's very true. And the other problem is that, like Mother, yet another Jesus parable of, and that she even went so far as to say, led out into the wilderness just like Jesus. And I'm like, oh God, no, it's just now it's just possible also that having grown up in the South and having so many parable movies shoved down my throat throughout my entire life.
Yeah.
That I'm just tired of the premise. And I don't think that it's original at all to be like, oh man, guys, we're going to do a story that's kind of like Jesus, but we're going to make it a witch story. And I'm just like, oh wow, really? That one again? Cool. You know, it's not like the hero's journey where I have made myself enjoy that cliched nonsense. This was more like this felt like Mother to me, because whenever there was something that was scary or spooky or whatever, it just felt like it was gratuitous. Like, oh, here's a little bit of shock, but we don't want to do a jump scare, so we're just going to have it be really graphic and kind of gross. And then, okay, there's that. All right, so here's the deal. I can't just crap on this movie because I actually do have
so
a bright spot.
That's all you're doing.
I do have a bright spot, and this is probably going to surprise you. I felt that the actor who did the best job in the movie was actually the boy.
Caleb,
the kid who played Caleb, first off, he had a really unique look to him, which I thought that was pretty cool. Like he couldn't help that. He's just born that way, but hey, good for you, dude. But his ability to actually get me somewhat emotionally invested in what he was going through, what he was feeling, him trying to shoulder the burdens of his father who was failing in front of his eyes, him trying to step up, his prepubescent lust, his aggression, his, you know, trying to be something that he couldn't be. He was the one, he really brought his character out. I really felt it. I thought that the Thomason and Catherine dynamic was fine. I thought that they both did okay. I thought the dad, you know, he's damn good at chopping wood in the dark. But, you know, when it came to connecting with the audience and trying to make me feel something, Caleb was the only thing that I actually got out of it. Now, I want to say, I hope that kid does something else in the future, because I think he's got it. He just needs an opportunity for something a little better.
Well, the father has that voice too, right? So all he has to do is walk in the room and say anything, and he sounds cool. It kind of gets a free pass like that. The mother, Kate Dickey, I think she's being kind of stereotyped or cast. What's the word?
Typecast.
Yeah. As like this paranoid, hysterical, crazy, horribly frigid female character, and we saw that in Game of Thrones, and I'm not sure what else I've seen her in real, but she fits the part very well because that's what this character was. Anya is the person we're writing the story with, right? She's one of the more least interesting characters, I think, in this movie. Just because she's just watching everything and reacting to things. She snaps a little bit at the end, and she obviously has the scene with her mother, and that goes down badly. But she's just like, she's constantly the victim.
Yeah.
And yeah, the twins, okay, they're just annoying and dancing around. I got tired of them pretty quick.
They're
and
like
the baby,
it's like a set piece.
The baby's just the baby, whatever. And that ended pretty quickly, obviously. The witch was cool. I like the fact that they didn't they really, I mean, it's the whole thing with like the Jaws effect, the Rosemary's Baby. They don't show you a lot. I like when they don't just say, here's the monster right off the bat, which is what most, because they know most horror audiences aren't patient.
Yes.
And they're going to leave, oh, this is boring, you know? And they play on their phone the whole time. And this movie asks more of you.
Ben, you just hit the nail on the head. What a fantastic comparison of what good horror is versus bad horror. So let's talk about Jaws for a second, shall we?
Sure. It's one of my favorite movies.
Who was the guy on the boat that you didn't care about?
That I didn't care about?
Yeah, who was the guy on the boat that you did not connect with, didn't care about, didn't find interesting? Who was
the sheriff.
You found the sheriff uninteresting, and you found Richard Dreyfuss really boring, and you found the boat captain really boring. Because that's what you're saying, is that these are the same thing. That's my point, is the stakes on that boat. Even Roy Scheider, even the sheriff, you know, he's chumming the water. The shark pops out behind him for half a second. You feel something, right?
I thought you were saying if there's one person I didn't care about, it'd be him. But I cared about all of them because you got to know them.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's what my problem is with this movie, is that I'm so glad these people are going to die, because Darwin needs to sort them out anyways. I cared about the guys on the boat, so the stakes were there. Like, the danger of them dying, not dying, you're not seeing the shark the whole time. You're not seeing the witch the whole time. But Jaws made me care about those guys on the boat. And in this movie, from start to finish, it's sort of like if this is a horror version of Seinfeld. Wipe them all out. Who cares?
It's kind of hard to compare. I mean, to be fair, they were both young director. Robert Eggers is like 30-something, and Spielberg was, 25 when he made Jaws?
Yeah.
But he's also Steven freaking Spielberg, okay? Young, hungry Spielberg before the dark times, before the 2000 movies.
Before he found Tom Hanks and got lazy.
Yes. So using the same crew and everything. And that's what's exciting about these younger directors, like Ari Aster and Robert Eggers, is that they're saying, that's cute, horror movies. Let's try this and see how our audience reacts to it. And there is an audience that reacts well to this, obviously, out there. That's why they keep getting made. A24 is a studio. When I see that, I'm going to watch that movie, like Uncut Gems or something, that says, okay, this isn't going to follow the normal path. I'm going to see something interesting or shocking or fun that I haven't seen in every other movie out there that's, you know, Jumanji and such.
Right.
So yeah. I'm interested just on that level.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
So...
All right, so Ben, I think we've done a really good job of debate on this particular episode. I think I've been pretty clear on where I stand on a lot of things. I agree with you. The cinematography was good. It was pretty. Yes. I like the natural light. That's cool. We saw that with what was that movie that came out last year with Emma Roberts? Not Emma Roberts. Emma Stone, and she played with and what's her name won the Oscar, the Queen.
The Favorite.
The Favorite also, you know, that movie sets the bar for natural light shooting.
Very much so.
And so, you know, I do like seeing things experimental. I do like seeing people try things. I'll be happy to go get Mandy and bring her down here, and she can call me out on this podcast, because sometimes I will go into my kitchen and I will try something new and groundbreaking and experimental, and she will throw it directly in the trash, because just because it's experimental doesn't mean it's good.
I am fully on board with that. Yes, Birdman. I know you don't. I'll stop trashing on Birdman. You liked it, but just because it's a neat idea doesn't mean it's a good idea.
Yes,
I fully appreciate that. A long time ago, 20 years ago, was a movie called Timeline. Remember that movie? You probably didn't see it. It was done with all filmed at the same time, four different cameras in four different quadrants of the screen. And it would eventually interact with each other. But it was this long one take. And it was just like, okay, I get the concept. Could have been a 10-minute movie. Not a two-hour movie. Like, just because you should or could, it doesn't mean you should, kind of thing.
Yes, Dr. Malcolm.
The old Ian Malcolm.
Yes, Dr. Malcolm.
Dr. Malcolm, as we should call him. Yes. So, yes, we've beaten this horse to death. We've beaten this Billy Goat to death.
So, hopefully it doesn't ram us in the side and kill us. So, here's the deal, Ben. This movie was streamed for free on Netflix.
That's correct. Thank you for that recommendation.
Hopefully, our friends, Kurt, thank you very much. Hopefully, our friends at Netflix will listen to this and send Kurt a percentage for a referral. He deserves it. But the thing is that economic benefit he gets might come in handy in these uncertain times. And for that reason, we have actually put together a very well-crafted, we built it in a laboratory. We tested it on monkeys And they all gave us the thumbs
Wait
up.
Wait a minute. Did I miss that?
And no, you were, no, unfortunately, you were the, one of the monkeys. Congratulations. And the no, I was, you were born in 78, right? I'm the monkey. Chinese placemat zodiac. Let's do this. So anyways, we want to help you out, listeners. So with this monkey-tested PETA unapproved testing, we have determined that a four-point testing scale is the absolute best a human being can possibly do to rate a movie. Now, when you're doing a quarantine review, that means that you're not going out to the theater. So our traditional four, go out to the theater, run to the theater, purchase the theater so that you have a theater to see it at, is not in effect. Instead, we're having the buy it, put it on your shelf.
Right.
Now, these days, you can purchase movies on Blu-ray, 3D Blu-ray, Laserdisc, whatever, depending on if we're doing a retro review like Zardoz.
Laserdisc.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we can get on Betamax, whatever you need, Ben. We're here for you. And so four represents you need to buy it and make it part of your collection because you're going to watch it again and again and enjoy it for generations to come. Three is stream it. Like I said, it is on Netflix right now. If you already have a Netflix account, it will cost you nothing. Nothing, I say. And what a great way to be able to you know, pinch your pennies when you spend nothing other than what you've already spent on your on your Dealy Bop or your subscription. Now, two is watch it on TV. Now, chances are this is not going to come on television unless you have my television, though. Came with a free television app built into it called Pluto TV. And Pluto TV is literally like if you took what, if you had described what hotel television was like to someone who had never heard of television and asked them to make something, it would be that. So there is an actual dedicated horror channel on Pluto TV. Ooh. Because it does it by genre. And so it's possible that this could come on free on your built-in TV app. Limitations may apply. One is Runaway Screaming. Obviously, because you're not going to be able to go to the theater, you won't have anything to run away from. You might be in your home. You'll run away outside, but then you should go back inside. Be safe. but one is this movie is real bad. You don't want to see it. So, Ben, being reminded, because I know, you know, we're getting on up there in our old age, both of us, we're getting senile in our old age. You know, it's difficult to keep track of all these four different points. So with them laid out, where do you think this falls on the Alan Smithy film review 4-point scale?
For my take, if you are a horror fan, if you have an hour and a half, if you like seeing dreary, dark, interesting period pieces with some devilishly interesting stuff, I would call, and would thou likes to live deliciously, as the last line here, which Damien is rolling his eyes right now, I'm very sure. I say go for it. I say give this a chance, because you're probably going to find some nuggets out of there, and it's going to have a few things that make you want to call up your friend and converse about, I think, because it's got that edge to it that is something that's going to be memorable for you later. So I'm going to give it a 3. I'm going to give it a 3. It's not a strong 3, but it's a 3 because I think it's worth watching in one continuous sweep. It's not going to be on like TBS or anything. There's some pretty nasty scenes of violence in this with sure. baby death and yeah, nasty old yuck stuff. Yeah, no. Okay. It's a 3 though. I'm going to give it a 3.
So, I'm going to go in through, I'd say if you're a horror fan, and you enjoy watching horror movies, then you know what good horror is. And you're going to be bored by this crap, and you're going to wish you were watching something that's similar but better that you're aware of because you're a horror fan. You probably already have a better version of this movie on your shelf. The big shocking things about baby death and naked devil worshipers and blah, blah, blah. There's better versions of this from... Go watch The Omen. Here, let me go ahead and make my own life harder. My name's Damien. Damien's the Antichrist. Go watch The Omen. That's way better than this crap. And I'm not talking about the remake. I'm talking about the original 70s version. So,
I haven't seen either. I haven't seen either of them.
I don't want to do that. Did I just screw myself on a retro review?
Have you seen the original?
Of course. I've okay. seen them all. I had to figure out what the kids were calling me in school. So, because I was like, come on, Damien's from The Exorcist. He's the good guy. And you're like, no, you're the Antichrist. I'm like, no, The Exorcist. People used to throw up in the theater. By the way, if you're looking for a better horror movie, The Exorcist.
Yeah, The Exorcist. Yeah, I've not seen the sequel. Golly.
So,
there are a couple sequels, I
there's,
think.
I disagree with Ben. You guys will have to decide whether or not you agree with his taste or mine. I know that I'm generally the popcorn mainstream fanboy, and Ben.
Oh, you're a Marvel boy all the way.
And Ben enjoys more artistic fare, so that might have something to do with it. Even when I watch artistic, although you got to admit, when it comes to animation, I got you.
yes, you do.
But no, this movie's a one. It's a pretty bad
one.
Wow,
going to one. Oh.
It's a pretty low one. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen. I actually still, Mother is a better movie than this.
No.
And I actually hate Mother worse. So Mother has a lower score and is still a better movie than this.
Is Mortal Engines a better movie than this?
Mortal Engines and this have the exact same problem. They're both boring. That's the reason why Mother has a lower score, is that at least it was egregiously bad. This is just boring. It's just boring. You've seen it all, and if you haven't seen it all, then good for you. But it feels like homework. It feels like homework.
Ooh.
And so it's not fun, and nothing to me seemed groundbreaking, and the sound design and music are some of the worst. They're bad enough for me to finally notice the sound design and music. As Ben will tell you, I don't usually notice.
No, yeah, that's true. Yeah. So listeners, do not take Damien's negative opinion of this as a sign that we don't want to hear your recommendations and your pitches and your suggestions and requests, because we do want to keep hearing those. And we're thankful for Kurt for recommending a movie that obviously is very divisive in people's opinions of them, which is usually makes for a better review.
For a better podcast. Yeah. It's so much better when we don't agree.
Yes.
So I tip my cap to thee, for this was a fantastic recommendation. The movies I really hate watching are the twos. The twos are the ones that are actually really, because what are we get in here and we're like, hey, that's a movie.
it's in one ear and out the other. Either it's egregiously bad, or just because it's more fun to talk about, or it's so incredibly amazing, you know, hashtag Avengers Endgame, that it's a blast. So it's the middle zone that's the tricky zone. It was great, it was good, it's passable, it's a movie. like the Jumanjis, or you really love Stuber. It came out the other day. I watched it again. It's funny.
It's funny.
I wouldn't call it a four though. It's funny. You gave it a four.
It a four because it's so good.
It's fun.
It's basically art. It should be Stuber and Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel should be held up in the same regard. So, anyways, the best part about this is that I just ruined my credibility with that joke. So everyone will enjoy that. Second thing is that we want more recommendations, and you can do like Curtis did. You can actually recommend genres, because if you don't really know what movie you want us to watch, but you know what kind of movie you want us to watch,
right?
We can probably figure one out.
It'll be on Netflix. We can stream it for free, which is always
big
a bonus for us.
Big fan, especially right now when we can't just run out to Best Buy. Like we would do that. So the good news is we have a fantastic Facebook page for you to be able to post those recommendations. That is Alan Smithy Film Review on Facebook. Or if you enjoyed this podcast and want to listen to past episodes, check out our full archive going back 108 episodes on AlanSmithyReview.com. You can also check us out on Twitter, where we will promptly ignore you because both of us have probably forgotten the password at this point. So that is Alan Smithy Film Review on Facebook, AlanSmithyReview.com for the web. Like us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. I actually do listen to us on Spotify now, because that's where I listen to all my podcasts. And the best part is right now with being home and working from home and then going home and still being home, I've started voraciously consuming all of my podcasts by about midweek. So I'm super, super grateful to have one. And I'm sure your friends will too. So please tell them about us. Again, Alan Smithy Film Review. Ben, you got anything to tell our listeners?
Well, we know you had a lot of time on your hand. You're looking for ways to stimulate yourself. This is a great way. Keep the suggestions coming. We will watch the movie. No matter how bad the movie is, we will find a way to watch it. Everybody needs a good laugh right now. We want to go viral with ours, so keep them coming.
Yeah, buddy. All right. So, again, from the quarantine studios, this is your host, Damien.
This is Ben.
And we will catch you guys
tomorrow morning.
Probably next time. Bye.
Bye.